Tom Shattell is the sports columnist for the Omaha World Herald and has been for almost to the day 32 years, and that is a long time to keep one job. Congratulations on that, and thanks for your time, Tom.
Oh, thank you. I'll take that.
I don't care what you're doing. That is a long time to keep one job. How in the world have you managed to keep that job for 32 years?
I don't know. I must be fooling them. They must not be paying attention very much. One of these days they'll wake up and see what they've been doing.
So for the people who don't think about this every day like we do and don't intellectualize it in some degree like we do, what does a sports columnist do? Please describe your work.
Wow. Storyteller, the opinion maker, and just overall, I think it started out, and maybe it's still the case. Maybe it's more the case now than ever. I think you're the face of the sports section. I think you're sort of the voice of the sports section, and that's an interesting thing for me, because I really took me a long time to figure that out. I went through a lot of ups and downs with the readers, and we've gone round and round, and mostly I've had to figure them out, while they figured me out, and I've kind of come around to them as people have gotten softer, maybe. Had a family, kids. Maybe there's some truth to that. I think mostly it's also knowing your audience and what works, what doesn't work, but still incorporating your standard, the person, the columnist you want to be in that. So I was a longtime beat writer at the Kansas City Star and high schools, and then I covered the Big Eight for a long time, and then I was a beat writer at the Dallas Morning News for a year and a half before I came here, and I've always loved that. I've always loved the grind. I've always loved having a notepad in the back of my pocket, and just sort of being around the stories, being around the people, going to practices. I love going to practices. Love being around coaches and players. So I've always thought of myself as for lack of a better word, a sports columnist who's also like a beat writer, my beat is the whole state of Nebraska sports. It's not just Omaha; it's everybody. So, I took that to heart when I got the job. I promised them, and I think one of the reasons I got the job, I sold the idea that I would travel around the state and I would get to know people. And the summer for 3 years, lasted all 3 years, I did a tour of Nebraska, where in July I'd get in a car and I'd find five places to go. And I would go to a small town or here I'd go there. And I'd find five stories and I'd write a column about each one, going around the state. And my first year, I went to Norfolk, did a column on the sports editor of the longtime sports editor of the Norfolk paper, Denny Fuhrer. Then I went to Valentine to do something on Jerry List, the former Husker tight end who was a banker in Valentine. Then I went all the way around to Shadron and down to Scotts Bluff, and I can't remember where I did Scotts Bluff. And then I went, I might have gone somewhere else, but I ended up in Wood River, Scott Frost's living room, July of 92, interviewing his family. And he was a high school senior, and wrote about the legend of Scott Frost, and he's going to be recruited by every school in the country, and he was going to go to Stanford and so on and so forth. And I think ever since then, he probably hated me. But yeah,
let's put that Scott Frost story. Let's put that Scott Frost story on the hold for a minute, because I'm going to ask you a little bit later about him.
I just sort of, that's kind of the guy I wanted to be. But when I was coming up in 91, 92, as a young columnist, the age of talk radio was coming in, and it was on fire. You know, the Rush Limbaughs, the people on the sports talk was, you had to be loud and proud. You had to have and there were a lot of columnists who were really outrageous at the time. And so I kind of got latched into that deal for a while, and didn't always work out for me.
So, Tom, let me ask you this. And I don't mean a reference to talk radio. I mean a reference to your voice, as in what you have to say and how you say it. When do you think you found that voice? You said you experimented and got to know the fans, and you sort of pivoted toward the fans. When do you think you found the voice, your voice?
I don't think I found it yet. I don't think I'm there yet. I think I'm still looking. But I think I have settled into a place where I've always enjoyed humor. It doesn't mean I'm funny, but I've always enjoyed to try that approach. And I've always enjoyed telling stories. And, you know, and I really think people in Nebraska want, they want stories and they want information, but they also want perspective. And I sort of have, the last 20 years or so, I'm trying to lean into that mode a little bit of, okay, I've got all this history, all this experience, let's put it to use. And, you know, I got a lot of good advice. I worked with a lot of Hall of Fame writers over the years in Kansas City and Dallas. And, you know, they would give me advice and I would never listen to it, of course. But their advice was basically, don't get personal with athletes or coaches. Just tell the story. If they screwed up or they cost the team the game, just tell the story. You don't have to rub it in. And I occasionally try to rub it in to make myself look good. And I had to get out of that mode a little bit. It just wasn't me. I was being somebody that I wasn't in anyway. So one of my favorite columnists is Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post. And he writes a lot. He tells stories. He's got history. And people, I think, love the history. And they will, okay, here's what it means. Here's what this means. And I think I'm getting pretty good at that. And that's... You know, John, that's kind of the guy that I wanted to be all along. I remember thinking as a kid, you know, this is what I want to do for a living. And I want people to read my column when they're having breakfast every morning. And I think eventually I got to that point. Maybe nobody reads while they're having breakfast. Maybe they just run. But I think they do. And one of the best, maybe the greatest compliment I ever got was from the sports columnist of the LA Times. We were sitting on a Bill Plaschke. You might know the name. I've gotten to know him just to, when I was traveling and going to the big events. We were on a bus, I think, at a Super Bowl, going from one interview to the next. We were talking, and he said, "You know," he said, "you got the greatest job in the world." I go, "I do." I said, "You're a Jim Murray's paper. How can you say I have the greatest job in the world?" He goes, "Because," and he told a story about how he was covering the NFL, and he went. They sent him out to Gothenburg, Nebraska, to do a piece on Jay Novacek, who was the Dallas Cowboys All-Pro tight end, who was from Gothenburg. He played at Wyoming, but he was from Nebraska. He was a Western Nebraska Cowboy. And he said he went to their house, and got the Novacek house, And he said they were all sitting around the table arguing about something that I had written in Omaha. And he's like, who's this Chattel guy? Why are they talking about him? And he was fascinated by that. And that somebody way out in the middle of Western Nebraska would be arguing about an Omaha sports column. So,
isn't that what you want, though? I mean, that's what you want.
Yeah,
you want
I thought
people
that was
to talk
cool.
About what you do. Yeah,
absolutely.
How do the fans react? Maybe you've already answered that question. What do they say to you directly when they disagree vehemently with what you write?
You know, it was hardly ever directly. It was, and back in the day, it was letters. You know, there was no email, and there was a little voicemail. probably a lot of voicemails. Go back to Missouri was my most familiar, call that I heard. I went to school at Mizzou, graduated from J school in 80. And so when I introduced myself, I was one of the first things I said, I've covered the Big 8 for years. I know Nebraska, but I went to Missouri and so on and so forth. I have a passion for the Big 8. And so they latched on to the Missouri part, like, I'm, you know, he's an outsider. He's not one of us. And it was always go back to Missouri. And I was fortunate I never did. I'm still here. But occasionally, you know, you get on talk radio back then, the old Gary Java show on Coil or KCAR. You know, we used to do on those shows with Gary and Randy Ecker. And so I've got a stutter and I bumble and fumble around. And so that became a thing when people didn't like when I wrote that they went into that deal, which was fine. I mean, I've had that my whole life. I have a really cool story about how I kind of came out of that a little bit. I can tell you that later. So they've just, you know, the worst it probably ever got was Lawrence Phillips, October 95, when he got suspended, but then Tom Osborne decided he was going to bring him back. And I wrote, you know, this is the wrong move. Keep him on the team if you must. If he's going to be around structure and practice and his teammates. You know, he's a homeless kid from LA. If you got it, we want to help him, fine, but playing is a reward. Do not put him on that football field. And Tom did. And I always believe it was because he wanted to get him film for the NFL so he would have a future. In any case, they played him. I wrote it was a bit the wrong move. And phone call after phone call, letter after letter. And, there was a, you know, just I. There was a letter from a sweet old grandma from Grand Island, just berating me, and basically, you know, it. she said Lawrence was not at fault and all this stuff. And it was a really interesting time, really emotional time for the state. People were on one side or the other, and a lot of people were kind of afraid to be against Tom there. And so that was, I learned a lot there.
What did you hear from Tom Osborne?
I was always there. I learned a long time ago, if you're going to criticize somebody, you show up the next day. You're there. And mostly this was for my baseball writers and NFL writers who said, you know, if you're going to criticize a coach or a player, you're in the locker room the very next day. You're the first guy there. And then you, whatever they want to do to you, you got to sit there and you got to take it. You just got to listen to what I'm getting out of there, but you got to face them. And so I was faced them. And Tom and I have had a great relationship over the years. You know, the famous story, I met him when I was in a hot tub, you know, so I was working at the Kansas City Star then. I was covering K-State, KU, and Missouri. So I won a horrible football, but I won a great basketball in the '80s. And I had come up to Lincoln to one of the academic advisors. This is like early fall 88. And one of their academic advisors in Nebraska decided she was going to blow the whistle on Osborne, and that they were doing things they shouldn't be doing with academics or something. And I forget what the deal was. It turned out to be wrong. It turned out to be it wasn't the case at all. But I came up and wrote about it, and I forget what the deal was. But he, I'm sitting, you know, the morning of the Nebraska's at K State. And Manhattan, Kansas, like October 88. And I'm sitting there. It's you know, there. I always used to go down to Manhattan the night before, spend the night for an early game. So I go to, of course, when I go to Manhattan, I had to visit Aggieville. I mean, it's just required. You know, I take out some of the coaches' secretaries and some of the people in the office, and we'd go out to Aggieville and trying to make sure that they didn't run out of beer. And the next morning, I'm in the luxurious Manhattan Holodome, which you didn't remember what a Holodome was, the Holiday Inn with a roof over it. And they had like miniature golf and a pool and a little hot tub and all this stuff. And it was indoors.
Yeah.
Well, that was a Nebraska team hotel, the Manhattan Holodome. And I happened to be standing there, which was fine. But, you know, they didn't really know me. And, you know, some of them did. But anyway, next morning, getting ready to go to the game, I'm in the hot tub. I look up. All of a sudden, there's this tall figure standing over me. And it's Coach Osborne. And he introduces himself. Pardon me if I don't shake your hand, Tom. I'm in the hot tub. You know, and so this is how we meet. And so I have all the respect for the guy. I love writing about him. I went to the Orange Bowl, the Miami Orange Bowl. He went for two. I covered that game. I've covered many, many of his Oklahoma games and other games, and I've just found him fascinating. Most Big Eight writers found him boring. I found him fascinating. But anyway, that's how we meet. And he just wanted to get his side of the story on this academic deal. So I've always been able to. He's always called me at home and he always loved to get to the last word. He would always try to get his side of the story, and which I appreciate, right? I don't want, you know, I've had guys yell at me and hang up the phone. No, I'd rather hear your side of the story. I mean, that's what journalism is, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
Anyway, so during that whole Lawrence Phillips thing, Tom was great. And it was the outside media that he was really having a hard time with. The CBS guy, CBS News sent a guy in, Bernard Goldberg. And he set up lights in the interview room and all these bright lights. And then it was a circus. And then when it was his turn to ask a question, he shouted the question and the lights came on. It's just like, Coach Osborne. It's just like, what in the hell is this? It was TV.
It was Showtime. Yeah.
Yeah. So he went through a lot of these things. But I always appreciated that he would always take time to take the outside the national writers outside and talk to them, answer questions as long as they want.
Tom Chattel has been the sports columnist for the Omaha World Herald for 32 years now, and he's with us. I'm John Schrader. Thanks again for your time, Tom. Did you imagine that in 2023 you'd be looking back and say, gosh, I have been in Omaha for 32 years, when you were that kid in 1991 who took the job?
No, there's no way. In fact, I tell this story all the time. When I came up for my interview, I'm driving up from, I flew to Kansas City from Dallas, and I drove up, and I'm driving into Omaha, and I'm expecting a city. I'm driving in 480. I look over to the right, and I said, where's downtown at? Where is it? And there was one building. It was the Woodman Tower. That's all they had. And I'm going, well, they got one building. I said, oh no, I don't know about this. So I wind around 480, coming down the the 14th Street exit on the ramp, and I've got to try to find the World Herald. And I said, well, here's the address. It's right here. So but that was like the post office. That can't be a newspaper building. I'm used to, you know, Kansas City Star, we had the giant fountain out front, you know, big fountain, huge steps up to the, you know, impressive building. Dallas Morning News had a massive front of the building with the giant inscription of of some journalism saying on there. And it was just all very impressive and big and all that stuff. And this looked like I was going to the post office. It was like a two-story building, sort of a sand-colored deal. And so I went to that, and then I went out to eat the Old Market. And they take me to my sports editor, Steve Sinclair, managing editor, Deanne Sands, took me to a place called Scribbles in the Old Market. And it was a fine little restaurant. But every table had a thing of crayons, and you could draw on the placemat. I was just going, okay, one building, post office, crayons. Okay.
And you took the job.
Let's keep going. So after dinner, Steve Sinclair takes me out to his house in West Omaha, which within was 144th Street, right? There wasn't much. That was West Omaha, 144th and basically Dodge. We're driving on the street out there, and we're talking and so on and so forth. And I noticed at some point, 15 minutes into it, we're still on the same road. I'm going, Steve, I said, what's the deal with this road? We haven't left this road. What is this road? He said, oh, it's called Dodge Street. And it goes through the entire city. I'm going, I can't work here. This place is nuts. And so I'd already said no, basically. So the next day I get up, I do the interviews. And it's wonderful. And the people are incredible. I love the newsroom. I love the feel. I love, and of course, I already love Big Eight sports and college football. And so I ended up loving it. And they offered it, and I wanted to be a columnist. And it was hard to leave Dallas. But I did it. And I thought, well, you know what? I'll be here a couple of years, and I'll go back to Dallas, or I'll go to Kansas City, or I'll go here, I'll go there, I'll go to Denver. And I'll get a couple of years of columnists, and you know, a couple of years of being a columnist, and I'll go somewhere else. And then you meet a girl, and at you know, well, first I found a sports bar, the old Polly's, and then you know you go into Polly's one night, and there's a beautiful blonde at the bar. You buy her drinks. Next thing you know, well, 5 years later, you get married, and it's. You know, you have kids, and it's 1998, it's 2008, and I'm still here, and it's 2015, and we've had Bo Pelini, and we've, you know, we had Mike Riley, I'm still here, and it's just, I loved it. You know, I always wanted to be, you know, some of my heroes were on the Big Eight Skywriters Tour, these guys were columnists and editors of these small towns, like in KU, and Manhattan and Oklahoma, and I just loved the way those guys were respected and viewed, and they got to do college sports, never been into the pro sports as much. It just turned out to be a great fit, and they haven't thrown me out yet. But I got to tell you this one story. The reason I felt a karma about Nebraska. When I was a junior at Mizzou, trying to figure things out, but I knew I loved college football. I came up to do, I drove up to do the Missouri at Nebraska game, November 18th, 1978. Nebraska's on the edge of, you know, they just beat Oklahoma, greatest win ever for Osborne at the time. And Missouri was coming up, and they're just trying to go to a bowl game. And you know, Nebraska was going to go to the national championship game. It was on a wonderful gray day. My first experience in Lincoln, went to a Sweep Left sports bar in Lincoln, which the sign is on the still on the side of the building there. You can still see the guy's offensive lineman on the side of the building. That we went to another place called Marie's Oasis downtown, you know, these old women running the bar, all these cool downtown bars in Lincoln. I love the field. Go to the game. Stadium's unbelievable. The cornerstone inscriptions, you know, not the goal, but the game. I got chills looking at all that stuff. And, you know, it's overcast. It's cold. It's what this is football. And then the game was one of the greatest games ever. And I never forget driving back. We got out of the press box about 9 o'clock. I lost my Missouri rider friends. They went this way and I went that way. And I was meant to spend the night on their floor in their hotel room. So I lost them. So I ended up driving back to Kansas City and, you know, leaving about midnight and driving back. And on the way back, I needed to stop at a, there was, I forget, I wonder where this was, but somewhere on I-29 was a big truck stop. I go in and they've got a giant stack of World Heralds that had just been dropped on the door of the gas station. And the guy cuts the ribbon or cuts the tie string. And, you know, so I grabbed this giant Sunday paper that had just been dropped off there. And it had all the photos and stories from the game I just covered. So I buy the paper. I go to the car. I'm going through the sports section. It's got all of this stuff, incredible stuff. I'm reading everything. It's like 2 a.m. And there was a story by Larry Porter, the great World Herald outdoor writer, you know, the late great Larry Porter, became a good friend of mine. He was the sidebar guy at that game. He was like the number two on the Husker beat at the time. And you know, back then you could go in the locker room. So he wrote this incredible story describing Nebraska running back Ibeck Rick Burns, hero of the Oklahoma game, and then he ran for like a school record 255 yards against Missouri, and then they lose. But he's in the locker room, or he's in the training room, and they're peeling off his jersey and his pads, and Larry Porter's describing this in the story. And all of a sudden you read about the, and on his back there were the red claw marks where the defenders tried to stop him, but couldn't. I'm just like, it's 2 a.m. I'm on I-29. I'm a young writer. I'm impressionable. And I'm just in awe. I can't even breathe. I'm reading about these red claw marks. That's why I said, that's what I want to do for a living. I want to do that. I want to write about that. And so it was kind of a, I guess, in a way, maybe on a fitting that I came back to Nebraska.
Sounds like it was meant to be.
Absolutely. I don't know, because I grew up in San Diego and I ended up in Kansas City and Mizzou, and here I am. But yeah, it's I love it. I still love it, John. I still love August. I get fired up. I don't like traveling as much anymore. I've been everywhere. I've done all that. Now we drive around the Big Ten in a car, 10-hour drives, 8-hour drives, and I don't like that part anymore. I don't like the fact that you can't get to know the coaches. And you know, I used to go up to offensive line coach at Nebraska, Mel Tanfer. I used to go up to his office over lunch, just sit in his office and talk football. And he'd always tell me what I did wrong. Hey, you screwed that one up. You know, I would try to learn. But can't do that anymore. Can't get close to him. As you used to. And
let me ask you about that, Tom, because it sounds sort of self-serving for those of us who do this, but I really do believe that it serves the purpose of both the journalist and the coach for those of us on this side of the aisle to understand what's going on. You can't go watch practice. You can't get to know the coaches as well as you'd like to. You get the same access. You probably get better access, of course, in your position than most people do. But many of the people covering the team end up with the same people all the time, getting the same story, the same kinds of interviews. I think it serves the coaches as well for you to understand them and what they do and see their team. So on Saturday, you can make a better, more fair interpretation of what you've seen. That makes sense?
Back in the day, you're 100% right. There were, in the early 90s, we think about the teams, the people we were watching back then, the stuff we were seeing. There was Lee Barfneck, our great beat writer at the World Herald, Ken Hamilton, the, great beat writer for the Journal Star, and basically me occasionally. And there might be one TV guy. They always had the press conference on Tuesday in the old Big Red Lounge. So people would go to that, and then they wouldn't go to practice. But it was open, and, Lee and Ken were there every day. And, and maybe there was another guy once in a while, but it was always them. So there were just three or four people there. And Tom knew everybody, and he had their phone home numbers, and everybody knew everybody. Well, now, you've seen what it's like at practice. It's like 30 or 35 of us. I really can't blame the coaches and now there's cell phones and cameras and video deals and this deal, Twitter and all this stuff. And they're trying to keep it, not that we were, trying to hide things from people, but, back then, Tom McMorrow would say, look, you remember that play we just ran? Don't write about that. And to keep our access, we say, sure, we're not going to write about that. It's not important. We keep it in our head when the game happened. But you know what? If you wanted to write about it, go ahead. You wouldn't be able to come back or you might not watch practice anymore. It was more valuable to keep the access than to get some one-line scoop that nobody's going to remember. So at least that was always my feeling about the thing.
But that kind of information is still valuable to you. And if he trusts you and you trust them, then at some point it could be valuable, but it's also respectful to what they do. When I covered the 49ers for many years, you basically knew what the rules were, whether they're written or not. If there's a fight in practice, you don't write about it. They happen all the time. Right. If a guy limps off the field, you don't write about it until you get a report on that injury later in the day.
Exactly.
And it works because you can see the kinds of plays they run. You can see how fast the receivers are. You can see the offensive linemen if they're worth a damn, right? And so if you don't write about the guy who twisted his ankle, that's okay. You learned a hell of a lot during those 2 hours.
Oh, and it gave you authority in your writing. It gave you, because these people, what they're supposed to be doing, what they are doing. I remember one time Lee Barfneck, we were done, and he says, hold on a second. I need to go talk. I need to go see Doak Ostergaard, the trainer. Well, he walks down the hallway and into the tunnel, toward the locker room. He doesn't go in the locker room. He turns right and he goes down to the training room, and he walks right into the training room where everybody's getting taped and worked on. He goes into the back of the training room and interviews the trainer. And he did it because he was Lee Barfneck and he could do that. And nobody said boo. But that's the kind of stuff we had. And we don't have that now. It's harder you got to work harder to get it. I don't begrudge. I love all these guys I work with. It's just a different day when you've got this website and that website, and they've got four people. And they're doing a hell of a job. They're working hard. They're trying to get stories. But you're right. We get the same interviews every day at practice, same quotes. And occasionally you could pull a guy aside and get your own stuff. But not many do that. And
can you do that now still?
My style. I always enjoy doing that.
Can you do that now still? You're Tom Chattel. You've been there 32 years. You're the number one columnist and the number one media outlet in Nebraska. And can you do that, walk down the hall and get a private little moment or two with the head coach or the player or whatever you need?
Yes, except for the time where Bo Pelini called me a bunch of names and said he wouldn't do that anymore. And then the next week he did. there was one time he, the first Citrus Bowl, and he kind of blamed, they gave up a Hail Mary at halftime to South Carolina. And then after the game, they lose, and he kind of blames the players for, well, they knew what to do. They were coached to defend that play, and they didn't do it. And I wrote, you know, he usually says, I don't point the finger, I point the thumb at myself. I said, this is a time where he kind of point the finger at his players a little bit. And so, but a month later, my cell phone goes off, and it's his name on the thing. So it's him, and he calls me up, and he starts, Tom, I understand you wrote that I threw my players under the bus, and, you know, that's not what I do, and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden his voice starts rising, and he gets into it, and he's starting to scream, and he's starting to yell, and he's starting to cuss. And it becomes this thing where I said, I told somebody, it sounded like Jerry Faust, the Notre Dame coach. It was this real hoarse voice when he talked. He sounded like Jerry Faust. He was hoarse, and he's yelling and all this stuff. And I said, Bo, you know, he's in the middle of it. He can't even hear me. So, Bo, when you want to talk like an adult and have a conversation, like two people, call me back. And I hung up on him. So I had to work I had to do an errand for my wife or some kind of deal. So I'm going into Hy-Vee. I come out. I look at my phone, and there's 10 phone calls from Bo Pelini. So he called again. I answer. And he goes, Tom, I'm so sorry that happened. And then we talked like 45 minutes, you know, and it was just, that was Bo. He would go into this Bo, he'd go into this character, this person, that he'd come out and be like this. It was really something.
Tom Chattel is the sports columnist of the Omaha World Herald. I'm John Schrader. This is Watch the Media. You mentioned early in this conversation how you dealt with stuttering, which you've had your entire life. How did you do it? How did you overcome it? You deal with it?
Yeah, for a long time, I would never ask questions at a press conference. I was just like, I got nervous, and people don't want to hear me stutter and stuff. So I would always pull him aside later and try to talk to him one-on-one, so I wouldn't have to do it in front of the group. It would have been like 2007 or eight. There was a Nebraska offensive lineman who went on to play a long time in the NFL. Matt Slauson, great guy. But we never talked to him. They never brought him up. They finally brought him up to the press conference after his final game. He was a senior. And so he gets up there, and he's at a really bad stutter. And he's in front of the group, and I'm going, oh, boy, I can't. I like hid my head. I didn't want to listen to it. I didn't want to be there. And I was so worried about him stuttering in front of the group and what people were going to laugh and snicker and try to get on. Everybody was going to be awkward and uncomfortable. And then here he goes. He starts in. He's answering questions. He's stuttering. He's hesitating. He's pausing. He fights to get those words out. And I could tell he's really trying hard. And I was really uncomfortable. And I'm hiding my head. And I look around. I don't hear anything. And I look around. And none of the people, the writers, TV people, nobody that was there gave a crap. Nobody cared. They were answering. They were intent on listening to him. They gave him all the time in the world. They were great. They were incredible, and it blew me away. I was just really, I got emotional thinking, I mean, all this time, they don't care that I stutter. They don't care. I care. They don't care. And it made me wish I'd gone back to the year I was football writers president. I had to present the Atwood Trophy on national TV on ESPN at the awards show. So I'm out there. They gave me a little speech. I'm on a teleprompter. I'm going to introduce the winner and talk about the football writers and so on and so forth. Well, I cut the thing short so I wouldn't have to read all that. I just basically went out there and said, and the winner is. And now, because I didn't want to stutter in front of national TV. So I immediately thought, God, I wish I could go back and do that over, because I would, by God, stuttering is who I am. Why am I worried about what people think? It's just who I am, what I do. So it's part of me. And I wish I'd gone back on national TV and stuttered. But anyway, I pulled Slauson aside. We had a great talk. I used to talk to a speech class in Omaha. And one time I brought him with me. And the kids were, oh, he's this football player. And he's like us, he stutters. It's like, I mean, it was pretty powerful. But yeah, that moment changed me. It changed my life. And of course, the rule of being a columnist is everything's a column. So I got a column out of it.
So has it been valuable that the president of the United States talks about this stuff in public as well?
Yeah. I mean, everybody is. Yeah, I think it's just, I look at it like everybody's unique. Everybody has their thing. And that's what makes me unique, I guess.
So let's talk, Tom, a little bit about Scott Frost, if we might. You said you met Scott Frost when he was a high school kid in his living room in Wood River, Nebraska.
Right.
And again, math is not my best subject, but many years later, he ends up back here as the head coach of the football team. Did you have any inkling, or maybe when was the inkling you had that maybe this isn't going to work out?
Well, in Scott's junior year at Nebraska, not that I didn't know he was going to be a coach, but the third or fourth game of his career, you go out to Arizona State. Nebraska hasn't lost a game in 3 years, 2.5 years. They lose to Arizona State, Sun Devil Stadium. Jake Plummer, Jake the Snake, has a great game. It's a trap game. Nebraska's not done play well. I write a column. I basically blame the whole thing on Frost. He was this. He was that. Long way to go. He's no Tommy Frazier, so on and so forth. And I still to this day don't think he is ever forgiven me for that. And I got him, his family was against me. And it was the next week I saw my old buddy Mel Tenneper, and he said, you screwed that one up. And he didn't use the word screwed, he used another word. And he goes, that was our fault. The O-line cost us that game. It wasn't the quarterback. So I said, well, Daniel, I wish I'd known that when I wrote it. So, and I talked to Scott over the years, and we'd kind of come to peace with all that. And, you know, sports writers and athletes, we're going to be critical, and they're going to hate it. And we're just going to have to live with each other. But the way to do that is to always talk and always face each other. And, sometimes as a writer, you got to swallow your pride a little bit. You can't be a big shot. You can't be above them. I mean, we're journalists. It's not always going to be perfect, and it's not always going to be fun or easy. And but communication, showing up is, you've always got to do that. And that's the number one rule, show up. And but anyway, so. As a coach, I wish I was smart enough to know that when he was hired as head coach, and he said, we were talking about, okay, now you were with Nebraska, you were also with Oregon, Chip Kelly. So you've had really, really good back. In fact, you were with Bill Parcells and Belichick, and I mean, you've been, Bill Snyder, Bill Walsh, you've been around a lot of great coaches, but I said, Oregon and Nebraska, two different styles. which one do you think you might use here? And he said he wanted to do combine both. And I kind of bought into it. All right, maybe you can be organ, but maybe you can be more physical. And you know what? You got to be one or the other. And I wish I'd been smart enough then to know. I was kind of interested to see how he was going to do it. And he never did it. And it was always more organ than it was Nebraska here. And not just being physical, but all the mistakes, the sloppiness, the special teams that didn't do anything, just on and on and on. And yet they were so close in so many games. But I think I believe that's why they couldn't push forward. They couldn't get the wins. They weren't clean enough. They weren't, you know, exact enough. And he came back more as Chip Kelly than he did Osborne. He didn't have the – Matt Rhule has been more of a Nebraska coach than Frost was. You know what I mean? Going out and just respecting the traditions and embracing everything, and Osborne and Solich, and Scott just wasn't that kind of guy. And doesn't mean he's not a Nebraskan, but he is. But he just, you know, sometimes you go away and you learn from other people and you come back home and you, the things you learned, you've embraced the things you learned elsewhere. And you become more of your influences elsewhere. And I think that was the case here.
When did you start writing that, questioning him, and what was the reaction when you did?
I can't remember. I mean, a lot of that stuff just, probably the second year, maybe. I really don't remember when I started. I think the first year we had probably gave him a pass and some of those things, and, you know, taking over Adrian Martinez's early injury but just, you know, the stuff like, you know, you better get us now, you know, because here we come, and Purdue's a winnable game, and this deal and that deal. And it's just, he was always so defiant. And he's always had the chip on his shoulder. And yet his team's never played like that. I thought that was interesting to me. But his teams didn't play with a chip on his shoulder. But the coach always had it going there. So there were certainly people that were going to be by Frost no matter what. But those people became fewer and fewer as we went on. There was, by the last couple of years, and I remember media day a year ago writing, well, you know, Scott didn't even have an opening statement. He acted like he didn't want to be here. I mean, this is a big year, and his body language and tone is basically he doesn't care. And kind of reflected when he went for the onside kick in the opener. I thought that he was just kind of freewheeling it a little bit, but I heard a lot about that, but that was mostly on Twitter. Twitter is not reality. Twitter is a whole other world. Yeah. And I don't even know is real, and most of it is not real. So I would say
he's not the kind of guy who would call you at home like the other coaches.
No.
Call you on your cell phone.
No. And he would come into the press conference and basically leave. You know, he wouldn't and he wouldn't really say much. And by that time he was kind of probably done. But but there were Nebraska fans who were with him. But then I think after the Northwestern game, everybody left. Everybody said onside kick, the loss to Northwestern, they've had enough. And then by the time of Georgia Southern, everybody was ready it's time. It's time. So it didn't take long.
Yeah. So this is not you. This is not intended for a question at you, but maybe some of your brothers and sisters. There seemed to me, and this is anecdotal, and I'm sorry about that, but that there were some folks after the fact who said, well, I knew that he was I knew that this was going on. I kind of had a feeling this was the way it was. Well, I heard that this happened. this sort of after the fact throwing, you know, dirt on the grave kind of thing. Did you feel that at all?
No, I never knew any. I mean, I really didn't. You know, with you know, I mean, you'd hear stuff from high school coaches and other people that he wasn't doing this, wasn't doing that. And, you know, there were a couple of former players who were kind of vocal in the media, and he would try to send people down to keep them quiet. And yeah, it was just kind of weird stuff like that. But I never felt like I knew the inside story on any of that. I didn't look hard enough, but I've always felt like there was a little bit of a wall there too. I just don't think, you know, it was a situation where, yeah, I think people are going to say that I knew this, and but okay, well, why didn't you write it?
Yeah, well, you gotta know it for sure before you can write it. You know, that's the way
it
works.
Right, I know, exactly.
So, did you ever feel like, again, this sounds like I'm, you know, throwing dirt on the grave again, but it seemed to me almost from day one that Scott Frost didn't really enjoy what he was doing. He just seemed so joyless so many times when you'd see him in front of the cameras in these press situations.
It's certainly a different guy than when he was in Orlando. And I always wondered, you know, sometimes, and maybe this applied to me too. Sometimes you have a dream, or, you know, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to be. And then the dream changes. He finds something. Hey, I like this. I like this a lot. I always wondered if maybe he shouldn't have stayed at UCF. Maybe that was where he should have been, that he could run his offense and be that. Now, to be fair, he inherited a roster at UCF under George O'Leary that was, I mean, he was a hell of a coach, and they were pretty well drilled. And he inherited a team that was, even when they lost that first year, I could play a little football. I mean, they played hard, we'll never know. He didn't get to stay and build on that, so we'll really never know how much was that, how much was him. But I just think, like, he felt so comfortable there. I always felt like he felt obligated that he had to come home. And the fact that it wasn't automatic, he really struggled with it for a while. I think that was that guy saying, yeah, I know I said I wanted to be the Nebraska coach, but I really like what I'm doing now. And boy, but he couldn't turn it down. If he turned it down, he never would have lived it down in Nebraska. People were so anxious to have him, and they were counting on him to save the day and be the hero. And he couldn't tell him no. He was really, I felt for him in a lot of ways, because I'm not sure he really wanted to come back. I think he might have, in part, so his dad could see him as the Nebraska football coach, and it was a very cool thing for them and their family. But yeah, I always wondered about that, yeah. John. I wonder if he should have stayed, and you know, coming into the Big Ten, I'm not sure he knew what that was. I mean, when I came into the Big Ten, I didn't know, and the offense he wanted to run wasn't going to work without, you know. But you know, we'll never know. But he couldn't turn down Nebraska.
What role did Tom Osborne play? What role did Tom Osborne play in that, in getting him here?
Well, I'm sure it, I don't know how much pressure Tom put on him. It seemed like it was a lot of Matt Davison. I'm sure, knowing Tom was not going to beg him to come back or you know, please, you know, we need you. Tom was going to be, okay, if you want my advice, I'm here. If you want me to, you know, Tom was really pulling for him to get the job. But I don't think Tom would really. I don't think he had to do. I don't think he had to do anything. I mean, Scott loves Nebraska, and he knew what it was. He knew what was here, and he knew what the people everybody wanted them back. So I don't think Tom really had to do anything. I mean, I really don't think he did. I don't think. I mean, not that I was aware of.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, and I'll put you on the spot a little bit, as long as you brought up the name Matt Davison. All along, he's the color announcer on the radio, and he's working for the athletic department, and he's pals with the head coach. I don't know how well you know Davison, and I don't mean to ask anything personal about that. And I've made this public before, and so I'm not betraying my feelings. I always thought that the conflict of interest there was so obvious that that it should have been changed, that here's a guy on the radio talking about a team that's struggling and he's working with them and he's pals with the head coach. Did you ever find that to be a little bit of a strange dynamic?
Well, you know, and a lot of color guys around the country are obviously alums or former players, or they're going to be for that team. And they're going to probably side with the coach or side with them. They're not going to call it the way they see it necessarily. Well, some might, but yeah, to be that affiliated though, to be that in the, you know, to be actually working for the head coach. Yeah. I thought that was, but he was already the color guy. I thought, well, maybe the color guy shouldn't go work for the coach. You know, maybe just be the color guy, you know.
Yeah.
Don't go in. You don't need to. I don't know that the rest of football was gonna break because Matt Davidson wasn't working there.
Yeah, so, I mean, he could have taken a break.
I just think he could have just been the go do the radio. If you're gonna do the radio, you don't need to do both.
Yeah, I think the maybe the biggest conflict of interest. And again, I don't mean to put you on the spot here because you know
that's okay.
He may be a source for you.
I really didn't think about it that much.
No, yeah, you know, and I don't think many people do. But what I guess where I really thought of it was when I learned that Matt Davison was mediating this deal for Bill Moose with the coach at UCF, Scott Frost, and he remained on the radio. Calling the games of the guy who's clearly on his way out and he's mediating. And I don't think that's too strong a word. I think he was mediating for Bill Moose, this relationship with Scott Frost while Frost was still the coach at UCF. I found that to be really a terribly offensive conflict of interest, to be quite honest with you. So,
yeah, I think, it was, you know, and I mean, to me, the thing that really I guess raised my eyebrows over was he was so vocal at the end of the Mike Riley run and how bad things were and how horrible things are. And, you know, we better save the program or, you know, the program's in trouble. And it was just so vocal and so emotional on the air about that. And then when things were bad with Frost, didn't quite hear that. So.
No.
So, and, you know, I'm not sure he did the fans a service there.
Yeah, and again, Tom, I think it's something that I think about more than most other people. But I do think as we're in the journalism college trying to teach ethics and trying to teach best business practices, those are the kinds of things I share with the students because I think it's important. Let me round this up here because we've talked for a long time, Tom, and I appreciate it very much. First, this is not the first dumb question probably today, but it may be the dumbest question. has your job changed a little bit over the 32 years, the way you deliver, the way your day works?
Well, I do a podcast now every week. I find myself talking more than or as much as writing sometimes. I still kind of do the same things. You know, I don't, what changes is the deadlines now are way tighter earlier. But the online is you can, you know, you want to write all night, you can, or, you know, so it's like having a 24-hour deadline in some ways too. So, no, I don't see I still get on to practice and with that notepad and try to find stories, try to get relationships with coaches, and still write columns. And I enjoy I really enjoy covering Creighton basketball. I've got, now there's a, basketball is different than football. Basketball, I know those coaches really well, and I'm able to go to practice and watch practice and talk the coaches and players, and it's really a old school feel, the basketball is. So I enjoy, you know, UNO. I love going to UNO. I'm getting to know those people, and they're all great. And I've always enjoyed the fact that I can branch away from just Nebraska and do other stuff. And the other stuff is all very meaningful. I mean, my goodness, Creighton basketball is probably the number one sport around here. And it's just fun to watch be around the top tier players, and a lot of their games are national games, and kind of what we used to do with Nebraska football. So hopefully that'll come back. I really always enjoy those games, but yeah, it's maybe how you watch it, how you view it is, they tend to put us now away from the court and basketball, and we don't get the access, but I always tell people, I'm glad I live when I did, and I'm glad I work when I did, because being able to go out with the coach, maybe have a drink, talk to him, go to practice, hang out with assistant coaches, get to know players. It was a great time.
So it's still as much fun as it was on September 1st of 1991, when you first walked into that two-story stone building as first day as a columnist in the Omaha World Herald.
It's as much fun when I'm in the press box. That's my home. I love the press box on a Saturday, and I love the interaction and the people, and I get to watch a football game, and I sit in front of a blank screen with a blank head, and I try to figure something out. And that's I've always really, that's been the best part for me, is what am I going to say? And I've said so many things, and I probably said them over and over, just different ways. I love that challenge, and I just love the life. And it's been a great career, and it sure beats working.
Isn't that the truth? All right. Hey, Tom, thank you very, very much for sharing all of these stories and the business. And I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Tom Chattel is the sports columnist for the Omaha World Herald. And as I've referenced a couple of times, since September 1 of 1991. And that is more than three decades. And congratulations again on that. I'm John Schrader, and this is Watch the Media.